We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And we're here today to help you find space for reflection, inspiration, and the honoring of your spirit. And joining us today is a C-level national female maverick in the K-12 and perhaps beyond even, spaced with leadership experiences ranging from the East Coast to the West Coast. So let's learn a little bit more about Melissa Dodd. Melissa serves as the Chief Technology Officer for the San Francisco Unified School District. If you haven't been there, you must, a phenomenal city. Melissa has effectively increased equity and access to technology and learning opportunities for more than 17 years in leadership roles from Boston Public Schools and in San Francisco Unified School District. You know, Melissa is currently charged with leading a really visionary process called Building a Digital District. This plan articulates the district's strategy to leverage technology to transform teaching, learning, and operations to realize the district's mission for each and every student to thrive in the 21st century, something essential, especially in this pandemic environment. You know, Melissa also earned her BS from Cornell University and a master's in education from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Some impressive credentials indeed. And in 2017, Cosin Withrow, Outstanding CTO of the Year, was given to her in her honor for the service that she engaged in with the Cosin board. Melissa is also the recipient of the 2018 Distinguished Service Award for Technology from CGCS. This is an award-winning leader. Keisha, we are so fortunate to have Melissa here on our episode.
Oh my goodness, we are lucky to have Melissa. I've known Melissa for a long time and had many a dinner with her, just saying. And they were all good, also, Melissa. But I'm super, super excited that you're finally able to make our Honor Roll podcast. And each week, we explore models of leadership together, and we focus on what we affectionately call the pattern of M, asking our guests who their role models are and how they've impacted your life, and then considering your mentors. And then we're going to ask you to look in the mirror and think about movements and mavericks. I always get tongue-tied with the M's, Frances.
You sure do. And it's so endearing, Keisha. And you know what else is endearing? This use of acronyms in education, isn't it? Or initializing. And I noticed that we used a couple in Melissa's opening, and one of them might be new to our audience. So I'm wondering, Melissa, what is CGCS? They're honoring you in big ways.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the honor roll. It really is an honor for me to join both of you and to be among the group of women that you invite onto this podcast. So thank you. So CGCS is the Council of Great City Schools, and it's an nonprofit organization. We represent, I believe the number is 72 now, but say 72 of the largest urban K-12 school districts in the country. So all of the superintendents and the C-level chiefs across these districts are, we have a network, we support each other, and just want to give a shout out to my fellow CTOs and CIOs, that's chief technology officers and chief information officers across the country. We have had quite the busy 2 years during this pandemic as we have shifted K-12 education to remote learning. It's been quite a feat for all of us.
That is a great organization too. And mm-hmm. one that I was in when I was in Nashville, and which is, I think, where we met actually initially, is at one of those conferences. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you have been recognized. You've done such incredible work all along the way. And I know you've been doing the work longer than you've been recognized for it. Let me just put that out there. So I really do appreciate that. Now let's get started with our infamous M's. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Can you share with us who your role models are and why?
So I definitely, it seems a bit cliche to say, but my parents are definitely my role models. And as I was thinking about this, I know I don't tell my mom that enough. So if you're listening, you are my role model. I am my mother's daughter. And that is, you know, being fierce and strong-willed. But also my dad, because my dad had such a measured determination. He was sort of the quiet balance to my mom. Both of my parents are educators, public educators. I actually had my dad for an elementary teacher in third and fifth grade. Wow. So I joke with him. He was my science teacher. So I joke, and also my math teacher. I will joke with him and say that I was homeschooled during elementary school. But they really, whether they wanted to or not, really instilled a belief and in education and the power of education. And all of our my entire family were all educators in some way.
Well, I am certain that you were definitely one of their star students. And if educators are allowed to have a favorite, I could imagine you were definitely one of their favorites. We'll have to get mom an episode to confirm all of this, of course.
Of course, of course.
So, you know, of course, we thank your parents for their service alongside your service and all of those who have been role models for you. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about your mentors. Who's been guiding you in this journey beyond this episode with your parents?
Yeah, I really feel fortunate that I've had a number of mentors along the way, both in my personal life and professionally. I've had the opportunity to work for some phenomenal superintendents who, you know, you not just pick up nuggets and pieces, but have really sort of instilled some core values in you. Dr. Carol Johnson, who was, you know, Carol, Dr. Johnson, my superintendent in Boston for many years. She was just such a phenomenal leader, and helped instill a sense of, you know, confidence and getting over that imposter syndrome, and stepping in, but doing so with humility and grace, and really demonstrated, I think, the importance of the role of a central office. You know, I've for the majority of my career have been in the central office and administration, and the importance of having a central office that provides, that helps ensure equity of access across all schools in a district, and really a safety net for all schools, having that support in place. And a couple of other mentors, I mentioned my CTO crew. I've got some amazing chief technology leaders who guide me. Pretty much every day we are on speed dial together. We are on, you know, text groups and text threads, and anytime, day or night, they're always there. So a big shout out, Shari Arkazi in LA, a retired CTO there, and Dr. Tom Ryan from Albuquerque, have just been guiding forces. And I'd be remiss to not mention another former superintendent who is very much enjoying the retirement life now, John McDonough from Boston as well. John had started as a clerk in the district, and moved up after, you know, 40 years into the superintendency. And one of the big things that I've learned about him or from him is really the importance of connection and relationship, and being a team, and that we are all in this together. So like I said, just feel really fortunate and hope that I'm doing the same, and taking that forward to people in their careers as well.
My goodness, you have listed iconic mentors. I mean, iconic. And honestly, Sharyar and Tom are, Francis and I know them too. And if they were women, we might interview them for the honor roll, but
they're not.
It can't be held. Yep.
So, heroes that support heroes.
It's true. We should try to get Carol on here. I think she would be amazing.
Yeah, Dr. Johnson would be. Yeah, she's just, you know, just such an amazing, such an amazing individual.
And she has been able to take her talent and replicate her phenomenal work in many districts, which is the telltale sign of a real astute superintendent. So, she's phenomenal. Well, we may circle back on that one. All right. So when did you look in the mirror and see a leader looking back?
Yeah. That's a good question. Sometimes when I look in the mirror, I'm not, I don't know if I always see that leader. I have to like remind myself of it. And I'm going to guess that other people saw it in me before I did. But it was definitely early on. As a kid, I think I always was one who kind of stepped in if there was a gap. If nobody was kind of stepping up, I would jump in and take charge a little bit. I was often, the bossy one. I never liked that word, but I kind of like it now. I'm okay. I'm good with it. Because I think what it represents to me is someone who, has a perspective, has a point of view, isn't afraid to share it, but also knows that, knows kind of when to also step back as well. I think when I really began to see it in high school, I joined a crew rowing team as a coxswain. So the person who sits in the boat and steers and yells out all the directions. And that's really when leadership for me took hold, and that was like 14, probably 15, I think I started. And I take a lot of lessons from those years of rowing in high school and college. I carry them into my work today.
That's awesome. I remember being woken up very early in the morning with a roommate who was also on crew as well. So a lot of discipline. That bossiness, as you mentioned, is incredibly important. But knowing what the way we want to identify boss really entails in our work is incredibly important. So I love that you said it's about having a point of view. And so Melissa, you will be our boss lady.
Thank you.
So I'm really curious as you think about, being this boss lady and really owning your role as a CTO in this field. And we know that there's not a ton of female CTOs in the K-12 education space. I'm curious to think about your role and also how you see women changing the world.
I think just being who we are is a change, and the spaces in which we show up and share that point of view. I for myself, and I think in general, there are big moves, but also the small moves that we make, how we interact and engage and build relationships and connections with people have huge influence. And I'm, reminded, I had to write it down. I'm terrible at like remembering specific quotes and things like that. Those are the things that I have to write down. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg's quote about women belong in all places where decisions are being made. It shouldn't be that women are the exception. In my role, in technology, I'm often the only woman in the room or one of few. And as a white woman, there are even fewer women of color in my role and in the rooms that I'm in technology. And so I think one of the ways of changing the world is also recognizing the enormity of that and the responsibility that we have to take action, whether it is big or small. So that's just, I think we do it inherently in how we show up.
You're so, so right on that. And, you mentioned RBG, who is, she's on a pedestal to many, many, many of us, if not all of us. And you mentioned Dr. Johnson at the very beginning, who in the education sphere is also on a pedestal to many of us. Who are some other mavericks that are disrupting or disturbing the system that other people need to be paying attention to in or out of education?
So, you know, we were talking about the Council of Great City Schools before. There are very few women CTOs leading K-12 districts. All of my fellow women CTOs and CIOs are definitely mavericks. And we have our own sort of community and network that we support each other with. So one in particular, Marlo Gaddis, watch her, Wake County, North Carolina CTO, phenomenal, phenomenal leader and friend who and mentor who also just, you know, inspires me every day. And I think, you know, us in our roles, you know, we disrupt by being women CTOs and building and working hard to sort of build a pipeline of talent, of women to take on this type of work and take on this type of role. You know, I have a number of sort of who I consider to be my co-conspirators in the world of education. So here in the Bay Area and back in Boston, and, you know, not necessarily even superintendents in districts, but other chiefs, directors, you know, who just do phenomenal work each and every day. You know, I feel like the list of individuals is probably too, I don't know, it's too long to name. I'm sure you're familiar with Dr. Dina Simmons, who is, you know, just a phenomenal leader around being an anti-racist educator. We had her in San Francisco. We do what's a one-day professional development. That's the day before teachers are report back to school. And we call it Digital District Day. So it's a way to sort of build technology skills and capacity. We started it about 6 years ago. And Dr. Dina Simmons was our keynote for, I guess it was 2020. So launching into a full, essentially a full year of distance learning. We had over 3,000 educators on our virtual PD. You know, she is just an inspiration and pushing on the intersection of race and gender and social emotional learning, racial justice, and healing. And I think we all could definitely, we needed it then. We all definitely need that healing now.
So true, so true. And as you think about healing and the message of equity, this is important work to do. Not only in the ways that we lead, but also the ways that we lead within ourselves and take care of ourselves. So to be this powerful CTO who disrupts the system with others, how do you take care of yourself? What can we learn from Melissa that we all need to add to our to-do list and maybe some things that we need to put on our to-don't list?
Yeah, I probably have more on the to-don't list than the to-do list. That's just, it's such a hard one, you know, because you want, you know, I want to like give and do as much as I possibly can. But one of the things that I'm trying to practice is, you know, carving out that time for myself. So I run almost every morning and that's my me time. I do it. It's my sanity check, helps me through the day. Learning how to say no. I did not, that's something that I have only recently learned how to do. Not always, you know, there's always room for improvement.
Just say maybe, or
not right now. That happens. I'd love to do that, but not right now. And saying that with some empathy sort of helps along the way. Everything's a bit of a balance, but I think sometimes we think that a balance that there always has to be equilibrium and that's not the case. And to be okay with that. Sometimes like one thing has to take higher priority than the other, but making sure that, you know, if like with a seesaw, if something's up, that it comes back down, that it doesn't stay that way forever. So, you know, recognizing that balance isn't always an equilibrium. And sometimes something has to be more important than the other. But I'm always open to other people's ideas and how they do it, because that this is definitely a growth area for me.
Well, it's a growth area for me too, my friend. Yeah. It's such a growth area that Frances frequently sends me health and fitness things.
Yes,
true. And I still don't use them like I should. But I'm inspired, and I appreciate that she thinks that I can use these health and fitness things.
Well, you know, Keisha, I did spend New Year's at my favorite place in the entire world, which is Miraval. I'm not a paid sponsor, but I would easily love to become one.
I know. I would love for you to become one, too, and then I could be your guest.
I would just like to move there is what I'm really trying to tell you.
So good. Yeah.
So I'm not good at all. Call us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and even just thinking about it, that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
You know, just taking that moment, that's good. You know, finding the spaces to breathe.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and making the spaces.
One of the things they encourage you to do is to have a cell phone sleeping bag and really think about as digital leaders, it's really hard for us to put our devices away and just be
present.
So one of those big, big takeaways around just how to live with digital mindfulness in this era is incredibly important. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. My daughter was stressing last night about how she has to read 20 books this semester. She's a sixth grader. And, you know, I was actually to that point, I was thinking, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to do this with her and not do books what I normally do, which is listen on a device when I'm running or read on my phone, like a real book. So we're gonna do a challenge, a 20 book challenge this semester of real books. So hopefully that'll help.
Sounds like a beautiful plan for engaging in some real sense of presence with your daughter. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, I think that screen time will be the death of us all, quite frankly. Excessive screen time. It's going to.
Excessive. Yeah. And quality over quantity, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the quality part, unfortunately, I think we all do too much that is just not quality.
TikTok.
So, right. Yeah. I'm okay with I'm okay with screen time, but it's got, you know, the quality factor is important, right? Although we did work on, my daughter helped me with some of my TikTok dances during the pandemic. So,
oh my gosh,
and that was exercise.
I'm gonna follow you.
We would exercise. So, you know, I think that all, there was purpose for it.
And bonding with your child is, you know, always, but I mean, even if you have to do it in ways that make you look like a fool. It's still good bonding.
And I think that's good role modeling too.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully they'll remember we did it, right?
Exactly.
If not, we can remind them. So now we're going to move to a little game of insights that we do to kind of finish off the podcast. And it is a finish the thought game. So here is the first one. An event that changed my world view.
Living abroad. So in high school, I had my first time leaving the country and living with a family in Costa Rica. That was eye-opening. And then in college and after college, lived in Spain for 2 years. And it is a very humbling experience. I was fortunate, sort of spoke the language, but not really, and having to navigate the world like that. So that has changed my whole worldview and how I approach life and work and everything that I do.
That experience of being a language learner in another community or country is huge.
Yep.
And it creates such empathy for the work that we do servicing our students, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I had so much privilege in those spaces too. So I recognize that as well. But yes, it helps build such tremendous empathy.
Yeah, strong awareness. And speaking of strong, how about this one? I became a stronger person after.
After I had my daughter. So I have a almost 12-year-old, and you know, she, having a child was the most, the greatest like learning experience about myself. So much. I mean, you dig in so deep when you bring someone into this world and have to take care of them. And it was the most, you know, humbling. I was probably at like my lowest point, but then being able to build back up from that and just each and every day just gives me strength and makes me a better person. And hopefully I'm doing that for her too.
Okay. What about this one? My life improved when I...
Well, I'll say, so I think my life improved when I moved out to California.
I knew it.
Don't tell my friends
for
and family.
For shame.
And here's why. So I'm from Buffalo originally, and then I spent 17 years in Boston. I know cold. I know snow. I did both for almost 40 years. Coming out to California, you know, don't get me wrong, I've got my issues, but the weather, being able to like look at the bay every day here and the Golden Gate Bridge, I mean, it is just breathtaking. So that's definitely, my life has improved out here for those reasons.
Yeah. I am embarrassed to have talked about us being in a blizzard with 4 inches of snow.
Feet, Keisha. Even in Boston, my last year in Boston, I was chief of staff, and one of my jobs was to work with the mayor's office and the mayor's chief of staff on whether or not to declare a snow day. And that last year, we had 3 blizzards in a row during a 2 or 3 week period, and so it was just constant. But prior to that, I used to always joke with Bostonians because 6, 8 inches, 9 inches maybe. And I'm like, okay, when we're talking feet, then it's a snowstorm. So I, you know,
it's all
I
relative, get it. Isn't it?
It's all relative. It is all relative.
Again, the CTO introducing metrics. I'm not surprised. Well, I don't know if we can top the examples of course, you know, having an amazing child and, you know, coming to California. But what might be a decision that changed your life?
I mentioned how, you know, both of my parents are educators, and growing up, they wanted me to do anything other than go into education. You know, it was be a doctor, be a lawyer, do something. So I think my first, my first job in education would have to be that decision. I will say that I worked at the American School of Madrid, so it wasn't so terrible in the sense of, exploring education, but that definitely set me on a path and just reaffirmed for me why I need to, you know, be working in schools, with schools, and in education. So that was really, that decision set me on my course.
Well, it is a course that we are so enamored with, and we are thrilled that you've been able to come to this space today, sharing your journey. You've highlighted for us the importance of connection and relationship, and that shines through in the work that you do each and every day, serving through a central office that you mentioned that really is about equity and access. And, you know, when it comes to really being a boss lady, I love to connect with my boss lady, my co-conspirator, Dr. Keisha Ray. And, you know, I know she's been taking copious notes. I always love to put her on the spot. And guess what, Keisha? Now is that time. What it's have you turn. Learned from Melissa that you didn't learn over one of your dinners at the Council of
Brooklyn? I know. I was actually thinking this part would be super easy, but you know what? These are the things that I haven't known about you before. So that's how I'm going to manage this. I didn't realize you were from a family of educators. I knew your parents were educators, but I didn't realize it was like generations of educators. And, you know, I've I just think that's the coolest thing. I believe teachers are born. I've taught in teacher ed programs, and I can tell you, those who come from teaching backgrounds, they just seem to seamlessly kind of move through the program, and that where the other ones are just trying to wrap their head around the, you know, the concept of teaching. I think it's incredible that you've had such iconic mentors throughout your life. And I know people who look up to you and are being mentored by you, whether you realize it or not. You may not even realize it. I think that's the cool part of mentoring, is sometimes you're influencing people. You don't even know you're doing it. Mm-hmm. No idea you were on a row team and a coxswain, if that's the right way to say it, but it sounds like a super boss position. And if I were on a row team, that's the position I think I would prefer. You don't have to row, right? You're just basically telling people what to do.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. That's it's perfect. Yes. If I like work, what's working out for that? Hey, are you just yelling at a bunch of people?
No, you're the coach in the boat. Okay. So you're everyone's eyes. They can't see where they're going. You're
just the only one down. Can. Oh wow.
Well, they're facing backwards. You're the one looking forward. So you're the one. You have to plan. You have to strategize. You have to be 10 steps ahead. You've got your eye on the horizon. You're the only one that can see the finish line. So, and you've got to bring eight or four people to work in unison to get to that finish line first. So that's not the definition of leadership. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard, but it's a lot of fun. When you win, they throw you in the water as the coxswain. So.
Oh gosh. In Buffalo? No, please tell me.
Well, you know, not during the winter. Spring and summer. Spring and summer.
I knew about your experience abroad, but I didn't know to the extent that you shared here. So I think that's super cool. And I really think it speaks to, you're just such a calm, well-rounded person. That's what, that's kind of how we talk about you. And you may not know that either, but you're just so calm and well-rounded, and you're such a good leader because you lead from a perspective of not only a servant's heart, but like you're equal to the team. And I think so many of us in the leadership realm can kind of get, you know, a little bit of a head and just kind of feel like, you know, I can't do that. You know, before we started our recording, you were talking about how your team is out teaching today, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're just, you know, you just jump in. And I think that is incredible leadership. And I'm looking forward to the folks that you're mentoring rising up and leading the same mm-hmm. as you, because I think the world will be a better place. Hey, is there anything that you didn't get to share that you want to share with our audience?
You know, I think I would just say, you know, I wake up every morning trying to remind myself that it's a new day, you know, new possibilities. Things the day before might not have gone. Actually, nothing ever goes according to plan, especially during a pandemic now. So you just kind of have to let go of that. So I think being able to let go of things is important, and to, like, you know, start fresh again the next day. And, you know, also to the point about, I'm fascinated about being thought of as calm. You know, I think there's there's like what's happening under the water, that like craziness racing of things. One of the things around trying not to stress on the small things, because you're just, it takes up too much energy. So not to stress the small things, and to, you know, start each day, you know, trying to be positive and seeing about, you know, what are the possibilities ahead of you? So I would like to end on a positive note there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Well, to our coach in the boat, I think that's going to stick with us. You know, one of the things we always do at the end of each episode is we craft a coaching question Ta-da! How wonderful is that connection? Mm-hmm. And this coaching question is always in honor of our Shiro in education, which is the amazing Melissa Dodd, the both calm, the energetic, and perhaps a little bossy. And so today's coaching question is, how might you step into the gap in both small and big ways? Again, how might you step into the gap in both small and big ways?
Oh, that's a good question. And that's good. Certainly represents the things that you have talked about during the show today. So thank you so much. Thanks to Frances for always crafting those coaching questions. Because mine would be like rank order, Likert scale kinds of things. And hers are deep, deep thought provoking questions. You know, Melissa, I know, very reflective. She's just a better person. We can't thank you enough, Melissa, for joining us today and spending a little time with us and just sharing your experience and your stories and your wisdom with all of our listeners. Mm-hmm. And we're super excited about you being in our honor roll group. Really excited about you being in that group with us. So to our audience, please join us for our next podcast where we're going to highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. Don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, that's R-O-L-E, and respond to the coaching question that the marvelous Frances just shared. And until then, be fierce and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor R-O-L-E.